You are listening to Appalachian Words, the show about language in Appalachia and the Great Smoky Mountains. I'm your host, Jennifer Heinmiller. I am co-author of the Dictionary of Smoky Mountain and Southern Appalachian English, a historical dictionary that is over 1.3 million words long and covers everything from ain't to zonies alive. If you're curious about that last one, subscribe and tune in. Appalachian English is a rich language with a history stretching back hundreds of years. But outside of the region, there are more stereotypes than honest conversation about the culture. In an effort to bring this language and its history to a wider audience, I decided to start this show. Each week, I'll be reading and discussing entries in the dictionary and highlighting Appalachian culture and history, as well as talking about how the dictionary is set up and the process of putting it together. I welcome your questions, comments, stories, or any other message you'd like to send me. Although, keeping it PG would be cool. Thanks. Thank you so much for those of you who have commented on the first two episodes and who have tuned in. I really appreciate your support. So we're just getting going here, and this is episode 3. It is September. The leaves are just beginning to change colors here in the mountains of western North Carolina. That means it's harvest season for a number of things, including apples. You know, people around here love to celebrate any kind of food with a festival, and there are several apple festivals around here. The Hendersonville Apple Festival, it's a really big one, I guess. It was this past weekend over Labor Day. Unfortunately, I missed it. I was out of state. But luckily, apple season runs from late August all the way through October, so there are plenty of opportunities left to enjoy them. And other than festivals, there are a lot of farms in western North Carolina and Tennessee, too, I would imagine, where you can take your family to spend the day, where they do, like, you pick apples or you buy them or they've already picked them. So you can pick apples or have a picnic out there or other activities, depending on what's available at the particular farm. Like, I know some of them have petting zoos and wagon rides. I haven't been to one in years and years, but it brings back fond memories for me. And of course, being something of a foodie, I'm pretty partial to farms that have like creative apple treats like apple cider donuts. Okay, I'm in no way affiliated with any place I mention here. Just want to say that. But just as an insider tip, if you're interested in the apple cider donuts, you can buy those at Skytop Orchard, which is near Flat Rock, North Carolina. And you can thank me later. Anyway, I am a big fan of apples myself and the different ways we can prepare them. Personally, back when I was in college, I used to make this flatbread pizza type meal that was essentially a crust, and I topped it with thinly sliced Granny Smith apples, red onion, and herbs, and I would bake it all together. It really made a nice lunch for those Indian summer days like we're experiencing in Asheville right now. And in the old days, people got pretty creative with apples, too. There weren't a lot of ways to keep food fresh before electric refrigerators, as you can imagine. So what a lot of people did in Appalachia and elsewhere, of course, was find creative ways to preserve the fresh produce. One of those ways is apple butter. And I'm sure if you've been through this area, you've seen little roadside stands or tourist areas that sell jars of apple butter. If you haven't had it, it's basically apples cooked down and mashed and pureed and canned in glass jars. Usually people add spices to it, like cinnamon and nutmeg, to kind of give it this apple pie flavor. It's really similar to applesauce, but typically it's cooked down a little bit longer, so it's really nice and thick. I wouldn't say it's like exactly the consistency of butter, but it's thick enough to be a good spread for your toast, where I think if you tried that with regular applesauce, you'd have kind of a soggy mess on your hands. But anyway, back to the apple butter and the spices they use. I've seen some creative flavors, especially lately, as people are kind of doing more fusion flavors with traditional Appalachian cooking. So you also have things like pumpkin butter, which is basically made the same way, also delicious. I think I've seen some other types of butters, maybe blackberry butter. I don't know if I'm making that up or not, but it seems like I've seen that out there. If anybody has seen it or if you make it, let me know. I'm curious about these different preserving methods. So this canning process let people enjoy fruit all through the winter and spring, when you typically couldn't really get a hold of fresh produce. And even in the 20th century, when we started importing produce from other countries or trucking it in from warm weather states like California or Florida, where you can grow fruit and vegetables throughout the year, some of the areas in Appalachia were pretty hard to get to and not really on the main shipping routes. Even now, if you drive through Appalachia, I mean, even Google Maps can't come up with any better ways to get you from here to there than some of these mountain roads. And last weekend, I actually ended up on a dirt road for, I want to say, a good 25 minutes, even now in 2019. So I can imagine decades ago, it was pretty hard to get to. And the cost of bringing in fresh fruits and vegetables probably would have been enormous and very difficult to afford for anybody. So because of this, people tended to use these preserving methods more into modern times than many other areas of the country. There are so many cookbooks you can still get your hands on that were written even 100 years ago, which describe some of these methods. I know a lot of them are available on like Google Books, so if you just do a quick search, you could see some of them right there at your fingertips. But there are some other recent cookbooks and, hard copy books that you can order, such as James Dabney's book, Smokehouse Ham, Spoonbread, and Scuppernong Wine, The Folklore and Art of Southern Appalachia. So this book, as well as others, talk about food preparation and include a lot of recipes. That's really a fantastic book if you haven't seen it. I believe it won a James Beard Award. And that book, it goes into particular painstaking detail about food traditions, growing your own food, all sorts of stories. It's just filled with recipes that I'm sure my grandmother would have recognized. I just think it's always fun to make those connections and see what your own ancestors probably knew and made and ate on a regular basis. Kind of gives you a peek into their daily lives. And I don't know, it just feels like a personal connection there, even though I'm sure I don't know anybody in that book. But also, there are chefs who recently are taking some of those older methods and they're putting a new spin on them, such as combining traditional Appalachian or Southern foods and cooking methods with things like Asian flavors or ingredients. I've also seen like French and Southern cooking fusion restaurants recently, especially here in the food scene in Asheville, which I highly recommend checking out if you haven't done that yet. It's a great way to try something new and fun, but still pay tribute to what brought us to where we are today as a Western North Carolina community. So the dictionary has a lot of apple-themed words. Apples were definitely a staple for many people in Appalachia for a number of reasons. Trees typically produced a lot of apples. If you've ever been apple picking, I'm sure you know about that. And the fruit is versatile and it's relatively easy to keep long term, especially with all these different preservation methods. So there's a joke in there somewhere about apples being part of the core of the Appalachian diet, but I'll refrain. Yeah, I went there. Anyway, so for starters, the phrase apple fruit was used a lot, and this meant apples that typically were stewed or cooked, especially into applesauce. The word fruit also often referred to just apples. I'm sure people ate raw apples sometimes, but from the research we've done for the dictionary and in talking to people from the region, it looks like they were often preferred in some sort of cooked form. And I can certainly understand that. Given that the harvest season is, late summer into autumn, and you have a chilly autumn or winter evening, some kind of hot cooked apple dish, it just sounds really cozy. I know things like apple cider, it's popular all over the country, of course. People also dried apples to be used in various ways, such as in stack cake. Now, from what I've seen with my own research, stack cake seemed to be a treat that was pretty well known throughout Appalachia, although honestly, I had never heard of it before I started working on this dictionary. So, if you're not familiar, a stack cake is this heavy round cake of four or more layers, or stacks, of dough alternating with dried fruit, most often applesauce, apple butter, or dried apples. So I guess alternating with fruit, not necessarily dried, but some kind of fruit filling there to sweeten it up between the layers. From the examples we collected for the dictionary, it seems like these were a pretty special treat, used for celebrations sometimes. It also looks like people often let the cake sit for a couple of days to let the flavors kind of meld together. I can also imagine maybe the layers of cake would get a little softer, which sounds wonderful to me. It makes me wonder about, like, were there mold issues or anything? But given the higher elevations, and especially if they were making this in the fall and winter, you'd probably be okay. I think getting stale would be more of a concern. But they must have kept all right because people just seem to love these. And we have some wonderful descriptions, like from Gene Ritchie's book called Singing Family of the Cumberlands from 1955. She wrote, "Edna mashed up dried apples and spiced them with cloves and sticks of cinnamon to go between the 7 layers of Mom's gingerbread stack cake." 7 layers. That must have been a heavy cake indeed. And Jean Ritchie, if you haven't heard of her, she was a folk singer who played dulcimer. I believe she passed in 2015. And when she was a child, her whole family sang, and apparently they just sang all the time, no matter what they were doing. And she learned how to sing and play music through the oral traditions of her older family members. She wrote a few books, I think, some memoirs, just going into great detail about growing up in Appalachia and also the music culture of the region. Really some fascinating stuff there. We have another great description of stack cake from the Encyclopedia of Appalachia, which was published fairly recently in 2006. Lacking both the amenities of modern kitchens and the choices of leavenings and flavorings, the pioneer housewife seeking to create sweet treats for the end of a meal layered rounds of baked pastry with fresh or stewed fruit to create stack cake. This enduring favorite could have as many as 16 layers. One of the most popular versions of this cake, especially during the winter months, was made with stewed dried apples. Okay, so here they're talking 16 layers. It doesn't talk about the diameter of the layers, but I would think they'd have to be pretty big around to support 16 of them. I've never seen a 16-layer cake, let alone one of these. I would love to see it one time. If anybody has done this, or if you have a picture of one of these enormous cakes, please send it to me. I would love to see such a thing. I've done a lot of research about it, and I've read all about these, but I don't think I've actually seen a picture of one. I'd be curious. But anyway, so on a related note, we had another dish called apple sonker, or sanker, which was a deep dish apple pie. This one wasn't nearly as formal as a stack cake, and it certainly didn't take as much time or effort to make. Sonker was a word for what they called this type of deep dish fruit pie. And we have some information here saying it may be related to an old Manx word that meant heavy. And Manx is a Gaelic language from the Isle of Man, which is this small island east of Ireland, so kind of between Ireland and England. And I'll talk about this more in another episode, but Appalachia has close ties with Ireland and Scotland, and a lot of our ancestry is from those places. So that word history, the etymology there, and the connection would certainly make sense. Although, of course, I can't prove it. There were also community events focusing on apples. So much like a quilting bee or a barn raising, communities had apple cuttings and apple butter stirrings. Apple cuttings were events where family and neighbors gathered together in late summer, early fall, so right around this time of year, to get together and peel and cut up apples to get them ready for drying so they could be stored throughout winter. The point was both work and socializing, of course. Joseph Hall, who I talked about last time, he was the guy who really built the backbone of this dictionary through his research that extended from the 1930s up through the 70s. But he encountered this term more than once. One of the people he interviewed in Hartford, Tennessee in 1959 said, "We had what we called an apple peeling to cut up, can, dry, make apples into applesauce." And there's another great clip from the interviews in the Shenandoah Park Oral History Collection up in Virginia, so a little bit further north than what we've typically been talking about. But this quote is from 1975. "Our family would get together. They'd have what they called apple peeling. Now, this is where the neighbors come in. Now, they would walk for miles, you know, just to get together and peel apples, get things ready for the apple butter boiling, cut them up and get them ready, get up early on the morning they was going to make apple butter. It would be an all-day job, boiling apple butter and packing cans and things." Apple butter stirrings were similar, but at those the community would get together to, as you probably have guessed, make apple butter. It sounds like a lot of work, but I can imagine how good it smelled. Oh my gosh. And there's a good description from a book called My Melungeon Heritage by Maddie Ruth Johnson. And she writes, "Every year, most of the households around the mountain had apple butter stirrers. This was mostly a woman's job, but all hands helped peel apples and took turns stirring the apple butter. It was an all-day job." I can certainly believe that. I remember picking apples as a kid, and one of the things that sticks out most to me, maybe this is just me, but it seemed like there were always bees on the apples that had fallen to the ground, and I remember being terrified of the bees. I wonder if people got stung at these events. Okay, that's a little bit dark. I hope no one got stung and everyone had apple butter and stacked cake and just had a wonderful time. Oh boy. One last thing I found when I was researching these terms was that at one time, pocket knives were actually referred to as apple peelers. And we have a Civil War letter that mentions this. From 1863, the soldier wrote, "I wrote and sent by John Reed, 150, also an apple peeler, of which you have never said whether you have received or not." I wonder if he ever did receive it. We also have an example from 1955, where the author wrote, "An old timer is one who remembers when a pocket knife was called an apple peeler." So this really shows us how important apples were to mountain life and culture. I mean, I wouldn't have a clue what someone meant by apple peeler, although it does make me think of those devices, where you like stick an apple on this sharp metal spike that's attached to a handle, and when you turn the handle around, it presses the apple against this metal blade, and like as you turn the handle, the peel gradually comes off in this long spiral. Have you ever seen one of these? They're really kind of fun. I don't have room for one in my kitchen, but I think they're kind of neat to watch, and kids love to play with that long piece of peel. When I was a kid, I remember we had a family gathering with extended family, people I didn't even know, at the traditional home place for my family in the mountains of Tennessee. And it seems like I remember there being one of those there. Pretty sure I remember there being a lot of bees there too. Well, anyway. Well, this wraps up this episode, but I am certainly curious if any of you have memories of apples in the mountains, or if you've ever made a stack cake, or if you're familiar with any of these other terms. Please let me know in the comments or reach out to me at appalachian.dictionary@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you, comments, suggestions. As always, the terms I mentioned here and the books will be in the show notes, so take a peek at those if you're curious. It is finally the end of the week here. I'm getting ready for a weekend of hiking in the mountains, as usual for me. Maybe I'll take an apple with me to lunch on the trail. Until next time.